nice rhythm section sets things up for Hank Crawford on this tune titled Mr. Blues. This is the third cut on his award-winning groove jazz album, Wild Flower, released in 1973. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we should start off on a great note today with our hearts filled with joy. Why? Because yesterday, LeBron James opened up a school in his hometown in Akron, Ohio. And it is called the I Promise School. It is going to take in about 240 third and fourth graders during this school year alone. And it is going to have them participate in a different kind of curriculum to get them up to speed. Many of them are 1 and even 2 years behind, which is to say they are typical byproducts of the Ohio public school system. And by extension, you can say this is the case throughout the United States, where public schools have been allowed to deteriorate to the point where children are being stultified and miseducated. But we should thank him. This is an extraordinary decision on his part to start up the school, to reinvest in his hometown, to give people a sense of hope. And more than anything else, I mean, he is simply expressing a style of leadership we haven't seen in a while. And so we should congratulate him and thank him and feel really good about this development and hope that there will be many more, not just from LeBron James, but from many more LeBron Jameses out there, reinvesting, coming home, if you will, and putting children who have been so badly abandoned and mistreated by these various educational systems to intervene and to salvage them from a system that would, in effect, have the utter, how should I put it, utter devastation, wreak utter devastation in their lives by undereducating, miseducating, and just plain not educating them. So I salute LeBron James today. And I know that yesterday when these kids showed up for class, I'm sure they were just brimming with joy. LeBron James described it as one of the most significant moments of his life. What a great thing. What a great thing to do. So, hats off to you, LeBron. Well, I want to talk about something today. We've covered this tangentially. We've come at it from an oblique angle. But it's time that we can take it on straight ahead. And that is the S word. Yep, it's not what you're thinking, you dirty-minded people out there. Funny, I was thinking it. But we'll see where we are going. With midterm elections looming, you'd think that the Democratic Party would heed the most important lesson from its last big battle in 2016, when it lost not only the House and the Senate and the White House, but 69 of 99 state legislatures as well. That was a devastating loss. Well, what is this lesson that you thought, or we would think that they would heed by now? Well, the lesson is that they ought to act like defeating this hateful administration really, really, really matters to them. By now, the Democratic Party's voter base should be electrified by a much deeper working relationship with, say, Bernie Sanders and the Our Revolution movement that grew out of his first run for president. By now, the party should have extolled several of the platform positions that gave Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that 28-year-old maverick from the Bronx, a stunning victory over 10-term candidate, 10-term Congressman Joe Crowley in the primary election for New York's 14th congressional district. But why aren't these kinds of things happening? Why aren't we seeing the cross-pollination of ideas? Why aren't we seeing coming together and an exchange, as we say for our Free Your Mind Friday, an exchange of information, opinions, and ideas that could help shore up their fortunes for the next election, which is right around the corner. Because, I say, both Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez are self-described democratic what? Socialists. And Democratic Party leaders are more afraid of the S word than they are of losing elections, it seems. What is the fear of the S word? Why are people so out of sorts about the word socialist? And then to pair it, as in the case of both Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez, with the word democratic. They're democratic socialists. That's what they say they are. But the Democratic Party right now is missing out on a strategy that it ought to employ to broaden and deepen its political base and to introduce new ideas. These ideas that both Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders have been talking about aren't radical. They're talking about healthcare reforms. They're talking about a minimum wage, a living wage. They're talking about housing being a critical need. They're talking about improving education. Is it because they use the word socialist that they are forbidden to be consulted or to begin some kind of discussion, some kind of a relationship that the public sees and appreciates, that there is some kind of a coalition in formation? They don't have to be married to each other, but at least communicate. This is now, I'm speaking about the Democratic Party specifically. What's the harm? what's the harm in having a quote summit meeting unquote? We know what happens at summit meetings. But I'm talking about in a true progressive style. What is it with this Democratic Party? They should reach out. They should begin the process of, opening up this tent a little bit, getting fresh ideas in, challenging themselves as they challenge this administration. And the fact is, I don't see that either Bernie Sanders or Ocasio-Cortez are putting any kind of impediments in the way of some kind of cooperative effort. On the other hand, we have a development in which, again, the Green Party should be encouraging this kind of coalition building. You don't have to love these people forever, but it is a political strategy. What's wrong? Why not try something new? They're not trying anything new because they are afraid of this term, democratic socialists. They don't want their constituencies to think, oh my God, the Democratic Party has gone communist, and thoughts like that. But in the meantime, I think they're missing out on a very good opportunity to begin some serious coalition building, which is what we need. I don't think we are at a point where any party, opposition party, by itself can really take on this administration and clean its clock. You'll need help. And from the point of view of these other parties and movements, it seems to me it makes sense to see where you can work with the Democratic Party and see, you may even get some of your own folks elected. But there is this hesitancy, and I'm surprised by it, that it seems as if they don't want to engage in any kind of coalition building for fear that the first accusation would be that they're communists and they're working with communists to overthrow a democratic administration, which is so crazy. Well, desperate times call for desperate measures, and I would say that there is so much more in common that they have, and we've talked about it before. The Green Party supposedly has a manifesto, if you will, of the major issues that concern it. I don't see where there's such a vast difference between the Green Party and what it wants or what it is championing and what we have Bernie Sanders, what he has been championing, and certainly for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is championing. So rather than say you're going to form a permanent structure, why not begin the process of talking about how you could expand the impact of the opposition, even if you don't want to give up your individual identity? Why not explore that and see where you can work together, because we definitely need it. We definitely need it. Well, I'll take a break now and come back and ask about your thoughts on the subject. What is it about this term democratic socialism that is getting people so scared? What is democratic socialism as you understand it? And why are people reticent about dealing with constituencies that are perfectly compatible in terms of their aims and objectives? And again, even if you don't forge a permanent arrangement, the matter at hand is Donald Trump has got to go. His administration has got to go. And if, in service of that, you can find a way to work with each other, support each other, that would be a great thing. But the Democratic Party still refuses to recognize that they're stuck. They're stuck in a whole different era. They haven't broadened this party. They haven't brought in new blood, new oxygenated blood. They have run out of ideas. And I'll even go so far as to say the hierarchy, the Democratic Party hierarchy, has been the principal stumbling block. It's most efficient impediment to progress. They keep holding on to a world that no longer exists. They're terrified of reaching out to young people, new people. They're not working the communities. They're not working the agendas applicable to these communities. And they seem secure in the idea of holding on to the old, the old diehard Democratic Party line. But they're not in tune. They're not in tune with what's happening out here. And what they have to do, because they don't have very much time to really put something together as a cogent response. They think that if they continue doing what they've been doing for umpteen years, somehow the people by themselves will experience an epiphany and they will redeem the Democratic Party and all will be well again. That's not the way this administration is going. In a short time, as you know, it has turned things on the head. And this insularity, it's an awful time to seek refuge in insularity. Now, we talked about Bernie Sanders and we talked about the fact that he's been, dancing on both sides of the fence. And when it suits him, he is a Democrat. When it doesn't suit him, he is a democratic socialist or some other kind of political creature. But we also discussed the fact that the Democratic Party sent a message specifically to him just a while ago when it issued from Mount Olympus an order, and that is, you can't take advantage of the bennies. You can't run as a Democrat if you're not a declared and avowed Democrat. Now, some people got upset about that. And I'm saying, well, from the perspective of the Democratic Party, I could see where it makes sense. Because in the end, it comes down to Why should you get the bennies of a party and you don't want to commit to the party? It's something they have to work out within the party itself. So you have that kind of turbulence going, which impedes dialogue. It impedes people working together. They have more in common than they have differences. We have this young lady coming in. Hopefully, she will prevail in the general election and capture the seat. But one would have expected a far more enthusiastic welcome from the Democratic Party to this young person, 28 years old. 28 years old. And she dispatched a 10-term congressman and is well on her way with new ideas, a whole new constituency, a whole new vision. And she's not trying to insult anybody. She's not trying to take anybody's thunder away. She's just trying to communicate that she has a vision that is very much in tune with a large population out there that has been disregarded. Nobody's talking to them. Nobody even perceives this constituency as having any power to do anything. So this is the time. If it's not going to happen, fine. But this is the time. If it's going to happen, it better start evidencing itself. And it just would make sense. It makes sense that they should be talking to each other. It makes sense that they should be galvanizing the movements, the various movements that they have launched, and moving as a team. You don't have to swallow up anybody and take their thunder, but this is the time to move differently. The Democratic Party, when all is said and done, is best situated to take on the Republican Donald Trump and his contagion. It's best situated because it's been around for a long time. It's got a discipline to running. It's got some things in place that are vital to the success of an election, right? To support the candidacies of new people with new ideas. But from what I see, now I could be really, really off the charts on this one, but from what I see the Democratic Party just continuing its very drab approach. It thinks that, you can drum up support and inspire a constituency at the last minute, and that Trump himself would be the very best weapon that they would have. He would turn people out to the polls to vote because they're so alienated by this administration. All of that to me makes no sense. I'm just asking the question. When are the political parties that say they are so progressive? They say they see the light. They say they're championing the cause of the people, but they're not talking to each other. And apparently they see no reason to be talking to each other to develop a strategy. And this is where we will lose, because it's in the end just plain stupid to blow an opportunity and to squander really valuable political currency this way. Okay, I really am going to break now and come back and take your calls, find out what you're thinking about the subject at 888-874-4888 right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Yatrice Lead, and I'm really keen to find out what it is you think about this idea. What is it about? Is it the word socialist that is turning people off, frightening them, putting them, at arm's length because they think that any association with somebody who says, well, we are democratic socialists, rather than say, well, you know, there's a thing called the democratic socialist. Why not just talk to each other? What is the problem? Tony from Orlando, you are on the air.
Hi, Yatrice. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Well, what I'm going to do this election, season, I'm not too happy with a lot of the policies that Trump's been pushing. I did vote for Trump, but since pretty much I have buyer's remorse at this point, I decided, and I haven't really given up on the whole voting thing because I truly believe that's the only way you're going to get him out is by voting him out or by at least limiting his votes in Congress. So that's my strategy going forward in this election cycle. So I'm going to take the opportunity to vote for the opposite party. But at the same time, I'm keeping in mind what you were discussing as far as the Democrat Party and how they're falling asleep at the wheel. And I've taken it. What I've done is that you can go online and you can research and you can find out who is your more progressive candidates that are running for these positions,
Ocasio-Cortez. I mean, I want to move away from the mechanics of the elections for a minute. I really want to get to the point of addressing this issue. Do you think that because we have seen significant strides made by people who identify themselves as democratic socialists, that there is a certain reticence, an unwillingness, a kind of hesitancy about aligning themselves politically with such people?
Yeah, I do. You just explained it. I mean, people have a fear that, in the political spectrum, that socialism goes further to the left, going further towards communism. But that's also a cultural thing in this country where if you have, Americans, the way we live in this country, it's a you're on your own type of life that we live in this country. People in Europe, that's one of the things that people in Europe do not like about the United States is that they know that in the United States, you're basically on your own. Countries in Europe, more socialist countries, they feel more comfortable in their setting because they feel like there's a better safety net. In the United States, you're pretty much on your own. If you get sick, something happens, you pretty much go bankrupt.
But do you think that the Democratic Party is being short-sighted here, and other parties as well? shouldn't they be thinking whether they, you know, in the end end up working with each other or not? Shouldn't they be thinking in terms of forming a coalition to take on this administration?
Most definitely, they should be taking the Ronald Reagan Big Tent approach. Unfortunately, because of the trap that they put this president in with the whole Russia collusion narrative, they have pretty much boxed themselves out inadvertently from getting close to a socialist platform. I think that's the handicap that they've put themselves in.
Well, you've gotten us started, and you started us well. Thanks, Tony, for your call today. We go to Brooklyn next. David, you're on the air, and good to hear from you today.
Yes. This kind of excited me hearing this conversation. But the way I look at it is that we have to remember that we're living in the United States, the world capital of capitalism. And this Democratic Party, that's with a large D, is a capitalist party, and socialism is not what they're interested in. They're interested in capitalism, and if you think, if a person thinks that you're going to turn this fox into a pussycat, that's not so. They have no intentions of turning into a socialist party or, let's say, a Northern European capitalist country where they have capitalism in check, like some of the Scandinavian countries. And the point is that that's wishful thinking. They're not going to turn into socialists. There's no way that you're going to get that so-called large D Democratic Party to do what is necessary to create a society that is for the benefit of the people. We have to never forget that this country is run by a small group at the top, and people have to realize that we I won't say we have warfare, but we are under attack. The people are under attack because those at the top have one goal in mind, that is to maintain as much profit, the bottom line, as they can. And, you know, so the reality is that we don't really realize who the enemy is. Most people have this idea that they can be in a party run by their oppressor, who keeps them under constant attack, and they go along with it. You know, many of the people in the black community belong to the Democratic Party now. At one time, they belonged to the Republican. And that's not going to change. There's no way that you can turn your enemy into a friend. He may play a game with you now and then to throw a few bennies your way in terms of some small socialist thing. But when it comes time to take those back, he takes them back. And that's what's been going on since the 1970s. So I'm not too impressed with Bernie Sanders or this other person that might win the seat of Crowley. And, you know, there are other things that have mattered there. It was demographics have changed and, you know, the other factors. But the point is that don't expect the enemy to turn into your friend. He's got another goal, and he is very good at tricking people. And I mean, this is a master. The point is that how would so few people control so many? And you don't hear anybody.
I don't disagree with you, but I'm saying, therefore, in the situation where we are right now,
Yes.
You don't see that it should even occur. I mean, even as a vague thought, that the Democrats, for example, might be inclined to say, hey, let's try something different here.
No, the point is, this is the mongoose or the fox, and he's not going to change from being a mongoose or fox. And if he does anything that sniffs around the idea of some socialist thing, that's just part of the play. And people have to understand there's no future in that. And don't be hoping that the so-called Democratic, a bunch of crooks party, that they're going to change. They are just not going to do it. And they may entertain an interloper like this lady who is going to be the congressperson or something for a little while, but they'll probably whip her into shape. So as I see it, there's absolutely no future in these two divisions of the same party, because they're both capitalist parties, Republican and Democrat. And you're not going to get anywhere with them. They're going to do whatever they can to play the masses of people, as they have been forever, to go along with their nonsense.
I see. All right. Well, thank you very much. Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I missed some of David's important statement, but I somewhat agree with him. I think that where we are now, and well, let me address this idea of democratic socialism. The people have been so programmed in the capitalist system that they don't even know what's in their best interest. So that's why the term itself always means one thing to Americans, and in much of Europe, and particularly the Scandinavian countries, they understand that capitalism at its worst and end point, the dictionary definition always used to do this back in the day, ends up with fascism, which is where we're headed now. So they realize the importance of a social safety net, such as universal health care being a right and not a privilege, and a basic safety net, which is needed even more now as the robotic and AI revolution comes on. But I want to address where we might go from here, because in light of the, and there's a book to this title too, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump, which is becoming more apparent. I think you referred to it as demented. Whatever the situation is, he has put this country and all of its elites in real catastrophic danger. So I think the people need to address the bankruptcy of the system. How does a Democratic Party give a candidate, give the people a candidate like Hillary Clinton, when people didn't progressively like George W. Bush, and that was the same idea in terms of bringing a dynasty to your top leadership? So I think the people need to realize that the system is so bankrupt. You have Alex. I want you to repeat at some point the number.
They recognize all of this. The question at the moment is, shouldn't there be something of a dialogue, just the same, to find out whether these parties, the Democratic Party and other movements and emerging parties, can work strategically together on challenging, on being the opposition against Trump?
Well, yes, of course. But the fact that Trump is such a calamity, a contagion, I love that term you use. We need to start from the bottom up, if you will. The way that the campaigns are financed, There have to be models of public financing of campaigns. I understand that the House of Representatives, they spend an extraordinary amount of time just raising money.
Yeah, we don't have time. We're running out of time. We are running out of time. The election is right around the corner. Could anything, in your view, be done to galvanize the power that does exist, however great, however small, but it is available? Could it be galvanized into an opposition to Trump?
Absolutely. Of course.
The Democrats would overcome their fear of the word socialist, in your view?
They better get to it, because their progressive politics is not progressive.
They better get to it. Okay, well, we'll see.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your call today. Muhammad from Queens, you're on the air.
Billy, help that your health continues to improve. I sincerely mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Now, just to get to the issue, I thank you.
Okay. To get to the issue, one thing they feel about this with socialism is not so much that socialism, but what that S really implies. And what it implies is sharing, seeing that equal distribution. Anytime that come in, that puts fear in those people because they're not about that. And who finances that machine called the Democratic Party? They do not want that. Now, I'm going to just touch on Ms. Cortez for a second. I had the good privilege of meeting her. I didn't get a chance to talk to her, but I did make eye contact with her. And she reminds me of Nydia Velázquez. I don't know if you know her. She's a representative.
Oh, yes,
of
New York. I know Nydia very well.
Yeah.
And she's a congresswoman from Brooklyn.
Yeah. Now, she's Puerto Rican, too, And she has those ways of the real Puerto Rican up in the hills and the mountains in Puerto Rico. They're very nice people. And most people from New York, when they come down there, what they do, they go to a place called Levittown. That's a little New York. And they go to a country club. That's in Carolina. But the real nice, honest people, they're in the countryside, in the hills and the mountains. And they just take you in and they treat you like they've been knowing you forever. That's what I sensed in Nydia Velázquez. I don't know how she's operating today. And that's also what I sensed in Ms. Cortez. I see that in her. And I hope when she does get in that party, she keep her sincerity and that real feeling. When I'm in her presence, I feel like I'm in the hills and the mountains of Puerto Rico, right?
The Democratic Party, will the Green Party, will any of the potential parties and movements, would the Democratic Party see any sense in reaching out to them and trying to find a way to galvanize or to put together the power that they have and the support, the political support that they have in this race that is coming up? Do you see that happening?
No, the Democrat Party is the left wing of and the Republicans are the right wing of the bird called democracy or capitalism. That's what it is. And they're a little more deceitful, but they do the same thing. Bernie Sanders, they don't Palestine. You can't say nothing when they're killing all those innocent people over there. And I haven't heard him speak out enough. And, when you look at that Democratic Party, they're just not desirable people. They've been bought also by the ruling class, the oligarchs, So, Eutrice, you have a very good day. I hope that I've shed a little insight on that. But what they fear is that sharing, and that's what socialism implies, sharing, equal distribution. Now, I'm going to just say this real quick, and then I'm going to leave things alone. The real wealth is in the earth, and the energy, the time, and the efforts to really develop that, it come from those people at the bottom. So they're really the wealthy people. They just don't know it, and they're being exploited by those people at the top who don't do an ounce of work but counting the money and mobilizing those Republicans and Democrats and the real wealth is from the people. Now, in a financial context, it means a medium of exchange, but money is a result of your efforts, your time, and your energy. That's what it is. And that is created by these people who's doing all this hard work in America and all over the world.
Thank you. Thanks for your call today. We go to California. Ed, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Just to expand upon the previous caller, you can't, unfortunately, you have a struggle within the Democratic Party, and you have progressives entering into the Democratic Party, but since Bill and Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton became president, the Democratic Party made a decision that the only way they could win elections is to join the game and join and be funded by corporations and corporate money. You didn't have that in the 60s. From Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, where he instituted Medicare and Medicaid, you go to Bill Clinton, who gutted welfare and basically deregulated the banking industry and deregulated the Glass-Steagall Act. So the Democratic Party has joined, they are the corporate wing, the left corporate wing. The problem is, what ends up happening is, at the end of Obama's nine-year term, 92% of all the wealth went to the top 2%. You can't win elections. So the struggle for the Democrats is, the corporations are helping us win elections, and we're not willing to take a chance on the people. We should have seen that with Bernie Sanders because, I mean, he started this movement, this socialistic movement. I mean, you know, growing up in the 60s, you know, I know how much we were all given, and I know how easy it was to make a living and pay your rent, and this idea that you need two and three jobs. And my father worked, and we were able to sustain an income without my mother having to go out and work. Now you got people two and three jobs. What does that tell you about society? Where's the money going? The standard of living. And the Democrats have this struggle. So you've got some progressives that join the Democrats, but the problem is what percentage of Democrats are still on the dole of the corporations? Hillary Clinton proved that if a progressive comes along like Bernie Sanders, the corporate Democrats are going to win because they've got the media behind them. They've got MSNBC behind them, CNN behind them. I watched Rachel Maddow talk about how negative evil it was when Bernie Sanders won New Hampshire because he didn't win any of those super delegates. That was a problem. The fix was already in for Hillary Clinton. So that Democratic Party, that Obama Party, that Clinton Party is running the party right now. So the Green Party probably doesn't want to invade because they're afraid of that side of the party corrupting them.
Hmm. Well, that's a great thought. That's a very, very strong point that you're making. But just the same, do you see that it's worth a try, at least? I mean, Trump actually had a summit meeting with Putin. Can't the Green Party and the Democratic Socialists and whoever else is out there, couldn't they just have a meeting to figure out how they could work with each other to really put up an opposition to this administration?
The problem is there's no unity to have that meeting because you struggle within the party. The Democrats aren't even willing to admit why they lost the election. Hillary Clinton says it was James Comey, who I went to school with, by the way. But she says it was him. It wasn't the fact that she tried to keep Bernie down, that the Democrats cheated along with MSNBC and the media to keep him down. And in California, there was specific cheating going on. They're not willing to acknowledge that instead of this hyping up this phony Russia thing just to keep the blame off Hillary. I mean, that's the party that can't decide whether it wants to help the people or help corporations.
Oh, it has decided it wants to help corporations. The decision was made, that's for sure. But you make a strong point about the fragmentation even within the Democratic Party itself. And so they will probably come to see a Sanders or an Ocasio-Cortez as an added threat to, you know, the standing order within the party, which they're accustomed to. They don't need any further headaches. You make a great point there. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Thanks. Gwen from New York, you are to be our last caller.
Okay, also I'll try to go fast, but I just want to say that I heard a lot of callers at the beginning, and I heard so much negativism, so much sarcasm, and so much "what the f? I'm not going to do anything because, you know, it's this, this, and this." But the thing is that with everything in life, it's not black and white. We can want it to be, but it's not. It's always somewhere in the middle, I think. And I'm not saying that I support middle candidates like Hillary. I didn't. But I think we suffer across the board. I think Democrats are much more, and progressives, liberals, whatever you want to call us, are much more critical of ourselves and our own party. And we all hear, and then many people just opt to drop out completely and say, that's it. I'm not getting the flavor I wanted, so I'm not going to play at all. And so when nobody plays, then the power players get to play. And they like it that way. They don't want anybody to show up. They absolutely don't. 11% in my district showed up to vote in East Harlem. And so what we got was more of the same. We got the Bloomberg policies pushed through by a so-called liberal Democrat, which was absolutely untrue. And so I really would ask people, you know, we're also part of the problem. I'm hearing you describe a problem with the Democrats not talking to other Democrats or other parties. But when I hear the audience, I don't hear a lot of people saying, well, look, we're willing to, you know, put down our arms and talk. And I also have experienced some of these things. You know, the Green Party here in New York is as wonderful as their agenda is. There is no way in the world that they will support anybody that runs on the Democratic ticket, even if the Democrat has every agenda planned as they do. And because that happens, it's very hard for small candidates to get on. And I hate to tell everybody, but reality is that the parties in New York are Democratic and Republican. And if you want to go and get on to a different ticket, your chances of getting in are almost zero. You have no chance. And it is so much work to do this kind of thing that it's not worth going out just to be a campaigner for somebody else's party, but lose anyway. It's a shitload of work. I'll be honest with you. It's so much work, and it's really disappointing. Even when I was as I ran as a city council candidate, as hard as I worked in the Bernie Sanders campaign, when I went back and say, "Hey, listen, do you think you could just support or endorse?" No way. Are you kidding me? And so I think that we are not talking to each other, period. We can all talk as, you know, liberals, as, you know, as being fair and inclusive, but we're not. And I also think it's a real turnoff to people when we sit and listen to people that are so negative. Like, there's just not, like, why even get up? Why even try? None of these systems are perfect. And that's where we are, why we are where we are, because I think when a system's not doing what we want, instead of us jumping in to try to change it, we just say, well, we're not going to go anymore. We're not showing up. And I think the people that don't show up in life get what they get. And that's where we are. So the people that did show up were a very small group of people for Donald Trump, but they showed up. They showed up strong and hard, and they're still out here. They're not the majority. They are a minority. But the difference is they show up, they vote, they put some money in there. And I think that in the case of the liberals, we're so self-critical, we can't get behind anybody. And well, and all of the things that have been pointed out are also true. I mean, we found ourselves not being able to get through anything without accepting money. I've never taken big money, but I think that a lot of people have taken big money because it was the easier way out. But, you know, as critical as everybody is of Bernie, I'm telling you, those are small campaign contributions. I know myself, I couldn't afford a lot, but I put $27 in every single month automatically because I felt that somebody was finally speaking at least truth to power. Was he a perfect candidate? No. Not a perfect candidate. And guess what? He had to run as a Democrat. There's no way in the whole world that he would have ever gotten as far as he got if he had not run as a Democrat. That's the reality. And it's like you said, there wasn't the time for him to run a brand new party to get out there. He had what he had. He changed over to get onto the ticket, which is what most people do. And I just want to say that I think that this young woman is going to get in. And I think that there is already changes happening because of her. Because there's always these charlatans that want to jump on the locomotive that they think is going, you know, in a better direction. So I hear people like Cory Booker already stealing her ideas, and I hear people that are established coming out and saying, they'll explain anything.
All of a sudden, people don't mind as long as you don't use the word socialist. You know, they'll be all right. Thanks, Gwen, for calling in and contributing so meaningfully today. Thank you. And thank you all for doing the same thing. This is what this program is all about, just getting each other engaged in thinking and talking and connecting with each other. Stay tuned. Coming up next is The Infectious Myth with David Crowe. We'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks again. Bye-bye.